Okay, I think we can start. Thank you all for coming. I think this is a very important occasion. We have with us today Mr. Dimitris Michalikopoulos, who is going to talk about a topic which is very relevant for what is happening nowadays in Greece. Because of things that are happening in Greece today, the focus is very much on the political and the economic at the macro level. And in some respects, we forget to look at the very detailed picture of how things are actually being implemented or not implemented on the ground. And I think the presentation we have today is going to shed some light on this issue and draw upon the very long experience of Mr. Michalikopoulos on issues related to that. Mr. Michalikopoulos is senior advisor to the Social Insurance Foundation in Greece. He's worked from a consultant's perspective in a number of projects on policy formulation, policy evaluation in different policy areas in Greece and abroad. He has worked as advisor in the past in the Ministry of Labour and Social Affairs, Social Security, and also in 2002-2004 he was member of the Social Protection Committee of the European Union. So he's worked on issues related to the topic from different policy and consultancy positions, both at the national and the European level. He's worked also on wider issues of social responsibility, employment, relations, employment programs for youth, social rights for refugees and minorities and so forth. So I think he has a broad experience on issues that relate to both policy implementation but also social policy and needs of social policy in Greece and abroad. So today he's going to talk in particular on the current reform of the ICA, the Social Insurance Foundation in Greece, and the re-establishment or not of social insurance credibility in the country. I'm very pleased to welcome Mr. Michalikopoulos to speak.
Thank you. I'm very glad and very honored to be invited by the Hellenic Observatory, the London School of Economics, to talk about an issue which I consider is greatly associated with both the essence and the causes of the crisis afflicting Greece nowadays. When I received the invitation for today's seminar, I wonder how interesting might be discussion about ICA's reform for the academic and research community involved in the analysis of economic and socio-political conditions of Greece's contemporary conditions. Knowing, however, the significance of the changes, of ICA's recent changes, I reckon that a discussion which will include also the problems, the shortcomings, the challenges which ICA was facing and continues to face is exceptionally timely and interesting. Because I think that the reform of ICA is a good case, probably is the best case of the administrative imperative administrative changes that are necessary to promote the immense reforms that our country needs. And one of these major reforms that Greece needs is the reform of the pension and social security system. The reform of ICA would not only decide upon the sustainability of ICA as public organization, but it will affect also the success of the social security reform. It will affect the safeguarding of adequate terms in a way that not to create additional deficits for the state budget, and in enhancing confidence, people's confidence on the social security system. I wish at the outset to clear that the contents of my presentation refer to my personal opinions and experiences from my position as advisor of the governor of ICA and as member of the committee for the strategic reorganization of ICA, and to not necessarily reflect the views of ICA's management or the views of the Ministry of Labour and Social Insurance. In the context of this evening's seminar, I will attempt to draw an outline of the exigencies ICA faces, as well as of the changes the organization has already forwarded in order to respond to these challenges, which I think are crucial in view of the demographic aging, the current recession, and the fiscal impasse that constrain the possibilities of the state budget to support social insurance. I shall also try to approach and describe the reasons for which reformation often remains incomplete or necessary changes are hindered, however reasonable and self-evident such changes may be considered. I suppose that the experience and the examples of an organization such as ICA influencing directly or indirectly the daily life or the future expectations of more than half the country's population explain why many times even the mostly well thought out policies run up against big adversities and cannot be put into practice. This shows what kind of dilemmas the modernization of state structures and in particular of social security often is facing. Before embarking on presenting the important challenges and aims that have been systematically pursued for almost 15 months now in ICA, I'd like to make an introduction, especially for those of you who perhaps are not familiar with issues of social security. Therefore, allow me to mention some basic facts about ICA itself and about more general challenges and sticky matters of the Greek social security system. Well, the Greek social security system. Of course, the aim of this evening presentation is not to give a theoretical analysis of the social security issue and the perspectives of its solution. Nonetheless, before touching upon the reformation itself, I believe it would be useful to briefly remind you the basic features and problems as far as the organization of social security in Greece is concerned. According to the evaluations which are being made in the context of the European Union and of the ECD and of committees like the dealt with social insurance in the past, the Greek social security system was facing the acute problem of economic sustainability, a problem which persists. According to all available figures, retirement benefits currently account for the highest GDP ratio compared to that of all EU member states. It's currently 12%. While until 2050, by which time the demographic aging of the Greek population will increase, this ratio is expected to soar up to 22%, maybe more. This ominous prospect, in combination with the pension's high dependence on the state budget and tax system, just to let you know, 30% of ICA's revenues come from the state budget from taxation, and the other 70% only comes from contributions. Renders the benefits future rather bleak. This became particularly evident during the last months because the insurance fund's deficit was directly linked with the country's deficit and the Troika's intervention. At the same time, the Greek social security system has not managed yet to guarantee adequate retirement benefits for its insured population, despite the fact that particular categories of insured people have at times got hold of important privileges and high rates of compensation. And I know that in foreign media there are often cases presented which show that Greeks are retiring at the age of 50 or 53, or some Greeks are getting replacement ratios that exceed 100% of their end salary. The majority of today's pensioners receive extremely low pensions, mostly due to the low maturity of the system. In other words, when I say about low maturity, this happens because these people remain in the social security system only for a few years. Another weakness of the system is its low rate of return. Until recently, and before the latest pension reform, the law enacted in 2010, which for the first time instituted the principle of a proportionate pension, the low rate of retirement return benefits was the cause which discouraged many employees from contributing to social security, as the benefits amount for many of them did not correspond at all to the contributions they had paid. The system's rationalization has been impeded, and still is, by the dominant problem of fragmentation. In Greece, apart from the known issue of many different insurance funds, an issue which seems to have been resolved once and for all by the recent reforms, even within these funds themselves, there are many special regulations and statuses which differentiate the treatment and insurance conditions of various groups of insured people, sustaining thus inequalities. The administrative deficiencies of insurance funds, as well as those of the Greek public administration as a whole, add up to all of the above, encumbering considerably the reforms, while simultaneously accumulating more problems and, most importantly, rendering impossible the collection of insurance contribution. Let's turn now to some key facts about ICA. ICA is the spinal cord of the Greek social security system. It was founded some 77 years ago, and since 1951, it is the main insurance agent for those who work on the basis of a salary. Following the reforms of the past decades, and especially after the recent insurance law of 2010, ICA has been renewed and is now the national pension organization for all salary-based employees. I should note that until before a couple of months, ICA was covering also the health insurance of employees, while important groups of employees, such as civil servants, fell until recently under other insurance funds. The Greek social security system's fragmentation, which is perhaps its most important inherent shortcoming, had led to the birth of many different insurance funds for different categories of employees. This situation is best exemplified by the banks, each of which until 2007 had its own first pillar insurance fund for its employees. The same pattern had been adopted by state-owned companies. During the last few years, all these insurance funds gradually merged with ICA, even though not always with the best possible way. As of 1st of January 2011, ICA has undertaken the coverage of retirement benefits for all employees of the private and the public sector alike, excluding only farmers and the self-employed. The project, which started with the insurance law of 2008 and was completed by the most recent law of 2010, for the first time of the Greek state history, laid the foundations for the functioning of a truly integrated pension system for employees. Now, some numbers about ICA. ICA is not only the country's largest insurance fund, but also its biggest public organization. It has an immense impact on half the population of this country, for it directly insures 3.2 million people and indirectly another 2.6 million. Its role on the economy and economic growth is equally crucial. Its annual revenues rise up to 15.2 billion euro, while at the same it collects contributions from approximately 300,000 companies and another 55,000 people employing household personnel. Its cash in hand, which is invested in movable assets, bonds, stocks, mutual funds, etc., amount to roughly 3 billion euro. That's before the haircut, of course, because we don't know how it will amount in a couple of days. And the objective value of its immovable property adds up to circa 900 million euro, which its market value is estimated to at least 2.5 billion euro. In 2010, ICA paid 10.8 billion euro for retirement benefits, 4.7 billion euro for health expenses, 650 million euro for social welfare expenses, while its operational costs, including the health and medical personnel payroll, surged to around 950 million euros. Furthermore, ICA is among the largest employers. For its administrative services, employ roughly 8,800 persons, while until the recent founding of the National Organization of Health Services, AOP, ICA was employing approximately 7,000 medical doctors and another 4,350 persons of other health skills. I must say that efforts are being made to close down some of ICA's 289 branches that are scattered all around Greece. Okay. Until before the emergence of AOP, the organization was operating also 5 hospitals, 160 local medical centers and decentralized health units. And I would also like to point out that ICA is the sole, regrettably, the sole insurance fund publishing a full report of its figures, as well as analytical figures pertaining to retirement benefits and the course of insurance as far as the factors of age and finances are concerned. Now let's move to the challenges ahead for ICA and for the social insurance system, the Greek social insurance system in general. The most important challenges ICA faces relate not only to its survival, but also to its transformation to a competent pension fund that will respond to contemporary social needs, rendering upgraded and quality services to its insured population and contributing to economic growth. The success of this undertaking, namely of reforming ICA, will finally determine the long-term sustainability and adequacy of Greek pensions. And this is not an overstatement. Furthermore, the pressures accruing from the uncontrolled course of fiscal matters and from the Troika have now made it almost impossible, both for the state budget to cover ICA's deficit and to proceed with further cuts on the front of pensions without an immense political cost. As I told you before, even without the deficit of the health sector, pensions are financed 30% from the state budget. Therefore, the immediate advancement of essential administrative reforms and changes appears to be the only alternative way for dealing with the crisis on a midterm level. Separating pensions and health insurance. I believe that the separation of the pension sector from the health sector is the first challenge that has been dealt with constitutionally and radically, and relates to the rest of the following challenges that I will mention later. This has been a deep-seated illness for ICA finances, as the never-ending health expenditures and the resulting ongoing deficits of the sector burdened the organization budget with millions of euro on an annual basis. In 2009 alone, the health sector's deficit climbed up roughly to 2.2 billion euro, while the monthly expenses for drugs reached the amount of 200 million. I must say here that in 2004, the monthly expenses for drugs was 60 million euros. And within 5 years, we had an increase of 140 million. These inefficient health expenditures were leading up to the constant allocation of resources from the pension sector to the health sector, predetermining thus ICA's overall financial collapse. Historically speaking, the health sector was incorporated into ICA on the one hand for the purpose of functioning as an incentive, as an additional incentive for people to register under the social security, and on the other to make up for the inefficiencies of the primary healthcare structural infrastructure of the Greek provinces. However, gradually the health sector came to the forefront of ICA attention, mostly due to the wild increase of related expenditure and to the inability of linking ICA structure with the national healthcare system. I can tell you that the board of ICA until very recently spent 95% of its time discussing about the health sector and only 5% about pensions. This inability led ICA to the creation and operation of health infrastructure all over the country, to the development of complex management mechanisms of this structure, and to health expenditure which they turn and encumbered the organization function. These dead ends led up to, albeit rather belatedly, to the brave decision to found a national organization of health services, which, in my view, is an essentially structural breakthrough in the Greek social security system. This organization has been already set up, and resources are being transferred from the health sector of ICA, from the OAE, Insurance Organizations of Self-Employed, and from OGA, the Agricultural Insurance Organization, and the Civil Service Insurance Organization. And these moves merges together the healthcare services of more than 9 million insured people. As of January 1st, 2012, the new organization is expected to be in full service with its own separate structure and budget. This change marks the most significant breakthrough since ICA was founded. And in view of the organization's administration, this is the right time to undertake initiatives of an encompassing reform in terms of organizational and operational issues, so as to focus on the crucial task of granting pensions for all employees of the private and public sector alike. The most, however, critical challenge for all pension funds facing already or will face soon the consequences of demographic aging would be to safeguard and financial sustainability. Particularly for ICA, which is called upon to operate amidst a suffocating fiscal environment and an immense recession, it is evident, I believe, that this challenge becomes an even more crucial venture. The securing of a long-term financial sustainability will have to be brought about in a manner that will maintain both adequate pensions and social security benefits without, though, burdening neither the Greek business's competitiveness by paying high social security contributions, nor the state budget by forcing it to make up for ICA's deficit. The system's low maturity rate, owing to the relatively late entrance of large parts of the working force into the insurance system, is expected to accentuate the economic pressures from 2015 onwards. In addition, the high percentage of pensioners who are entitled to the lowest pension benefits, which in reality are defined benefits, paid irrespective of the level of contributions, the widespread phenomenon of contributions evasion and the long-term weakening of the system's rate of return have caused the downfall of the insurance balance and have made impossible the self-funding of ICA on the basis of the pay-as-you-go model. Also, the particularly high rate of insurance contribution, which companies are today's 46%, possesses disincentives in attracting investments, which in turn could create jobs while it raises the cost of compliance. Let me point out to those of you who don't know that according to the new social security law, a minimum guaranteed pension, the so-called national pension, is established, amounting to 360 euros per month as of 2015. In addition, insured pensioners will receive a proportional amount of benefit that will correspond to their total insurance time. This change means that the state guarantees only the basic pension benefit, while the proportionate amount will have to be provided by the insurance fund's revenues accruing from contributions. In practical terms, this means that if the problem of the insurance system lack of resources or of underfunding is left unattended, it may lead to huge cuts of retirement benefits in the coming years. We already experienced this after Troika's interventions, but it can go worse if we don't take measures. Therefore, the first dilemma has to do with the possibility of increasing ICA's revenues in order to secure to its insured population adequate levels of benefits. Indeed, at a time of soaring unemployment rates, currently 17%, economic crisis and low competitiveness of the part of Greek businesses. Let me remark that the Great Recession and the unemployment increased during this year, 2011, forced ICA to revise its budget forecast, anticipating for these reasons alone plummeting revenues by 500 million euro. The only way for ICA to solve this dilemma is to set as its first priority the rationalization of revenues and expenditures for the purpose of maintaining adequate pensions. This has undoubtedly been said for far too many times in the past. In any case, today's circumstances, not only in the area of social security, but also in the country as a whole, dictate radical handling of this matter. It should also be taken under consideration that in Greece, the rate of undeclared work exceeds 20%, depriving insurance funds of revenues. It is estimated that due to contribution evasion, ICA alone loses 3.5 billion euros a year. And also creating the phenomenon of a high rate of employees to opt to exit the labor market and to go for minimum retirement benefit. Just consider the fact that today approximately 70% of ICA's pensioners receive the minimum retirement benefit, which is similar to a social welfare benefit, designated that these people remained registered in the social security system for 15 or 20 years at the most. Moreover, this minimum limit is conferred indiscriminately to all those who have completed up to 23 years of social insurance, regardless of the contribution level they have paid. Another key factor for the necessary rationalization is for ICA to collect from the employers pending contributions that have already been deducted from their employee salaries. Let me pinpoint that confirmed debts of the private sector to ICA reach the amount of 6 billion euro. This debt depreciates the organization's insurance capital, while it also creates an environment of unfair competition vis-à-vis those businesses which pay their contributions regularly. At this point, allow me to mention also all the steps ICA has already taken. First, it employed the stick and the carrot method. More precisely, ICA proceeded with a settlement, apparently unable to turn a blind eye to the crisis that hits the economy. And despite the fact that such an arrangement involves the risk of discouraging employers who fulfill regularly their obligation, ICA offered the carrot by decreasing the fines for overdue contributions and introduced a method of gradual payoff, calling businesses to a friendly settlement of their debts. At the same time, though, ICA brandished the stick, starting with applying compulsory measures, which for the first time ever extended even to the practice of garnishment. One may arguably ask, how feasible is it to promote measures such as this in a period of such immense crisis and while businesses face such difficulties? Nevertheless, it should not be disregarded that to ignore the injustice caused by contribution evasion will damage not only ICA's finances, but also the functioning of the labor market itself and the credibility of social security. The first figures are encouraging, indicating that these measures have affected a considerable revenue increase, for out of the roughly 6 billion euro of confirmed debts, 1.2 billion was subjected under settlement. Additionally, it is also 2 months since the introduction of the labor coupon, the so-called ergosimo, a system according to which those who are occasionally employed, house personnel, gardeners, private tutors, etc., are paid with coupons which are cast in banks, while the employee's insurance contribution is automatically deducted. This practice is common, of course, in other European countries and will undoubtedly strengthen the position of large group of people who until today work in the grey labour market, and will facilitate their integration into the social security system. Nonetheless, in the end, this whole enterprise will depend not only on the checks affected by ICA, but also on the awareness of the directly interested parties about the importance of being integrated in the formal labor market and in the social security mechanism. If someone asks why nothing had been done during the past years, I could name a number of reasons. After all, we have already proposed to the Ministry of Finance and the Ministry of Labour more radical changes. One such proposal is to delegate the collection of insurance contributions either to a single collection mechanism for all insurance funds, or even to a single authority for collecting all public revenues, taxes and social security contributions. Let me note that currently a business has to report its employee salaries both to the tax authorities in order for the corresponding tax to be deducted and separately to ICA. Surprisingly enough, these figures, these data are not regularly cross-checked, and an occasional cross-checking sample for the fiscal year 2009, which was made recently for the first time, revealed huge deviation exceeding an average of 25%. In other words, this means that the salaries that are being reported to ICA, based on which insurance contributions are being calculated, present a downward variation of 25% compared to those salaries reported by the employers to the tax authorities so as to benefit from the tax deduction. Mind you that I have not mentioned the bureaucratic cost for each company business that has to undergo 2 different procedures regarding its employee salaries. Equally important is to simplify the procedure a business has to undergo in order to report and pay its insurance contributions. Surely the online submission of the detailed periodic statement by businesses, as well as the payment of their contributions through banks, have been important steps. Nonetheless, it cannot be ignored the fact that presently ICA offers 852 different insurance packages. In short, there are 852 different types of insurance combinations and amounts of contribution. The management of these 100 subcategories itself generates a huge administrative cost for ICA, while simultaneously it makes it extremely complicated for businesses to calculate the contributions to be paid. This is a typical feature of the rationale that has prevailed over the past years in the social security system, as well as in the legislation system in general. There have been ample special arrangements, exemptions, and discretionary treatment of various groups which took place in the context of a fragmented system or even of favoring corporate interests. How could anyone, for instance, justify the special insurance package for the employees of the Vores Museum? Not of the employees of all museums, just for the employees of Vores Museum, or the special insurance package for the musician of the Philharmonic Orchestra of Thessaloniki, not for all musicians, or a special insurance package which is currently valid only for one employee. The merging of Arion's insurance funds into ICA not only failed to lead to a uniform treatment of all those insured, but it also transferred fragmentation within ICA itself, sustaining discrimination and special status treatments. The first project of downsizing the insurance packages from 852 to 70 has already been prepared, and as 90% of employees coming under five types of insurance packages, pretty soon our goal, the goal of ICA, will be to reach a single-digit number. At the same time, the reform of inspection mechanism and the enforcement of standard procedures and rules are already underway, and this will be carried out in cooperation with Labour Inspectorate. Judging from the ICA experience, I think that the inspection mechanism's weakness that is common in Greece should be attributed mostly to organizational gaps, to their systems and available infrastructure, and definitely not to the lack of a regulative context. Suffice it to say that until very recently, the data received by ICA electronically from the various businesses for the purpose of effectuating controls either were not used at all or were used only very little. It also happened that the various inspection departments very often were unable to proceed with the tasks of inspection due to a number of other administrative tasks undertaken by ICA, which could be carried out electronically. Finally, there were never quantified and concrete inspection goals, while inspections were carried out wherever the task was easy, for instance, in big, well-organized corporations, very often ignoring cases which presumably display the largest contribution evasion. As we speak, ICA has pursued the reform of inspection procedures by introducing risk analysis systems in order to carry out targeted controls upon businesses. At the same time, it is for the first time that data submitted by employers are going to be cross-checked, while controlling mechanisms will be supported by human resources and new standards and tools in order to carry through consistently the various duties. The second extremely important venture aiming at safeguarding ICA's financial sustainability, which normally should not be considered as a reform, of course, but rather as a self-evident and constant function of any organization, relates to the rational management of expenditure and the cut of extravagant expenses. Surely it sounds strange that this may be an essential contribution in dealing with the challenge of financial sustainability. However, the conclusions we reached following last year's efforts are quite revealing about the monstrous loss of resources in the area of social security and the available possibilities of cutting down money squandering and fighting fraud. Those of you who keep up with the Greek media may have read recently that the census of ICA's pensioner has recently been completed. Note that this was the first census after 1998, the year when pensions started paid through banks. The first findings are compelling. Over 120,000 pensioners didn't take part in the census, which means that even if half of these people are simply negligent because they won't get their pension this month, that's the consequence of not being registered, very plausibly a good many pensions amounting to a few thousands might have been cast out for years by relatives of pensioners who had long ago departed this life. The annual loss for ICA amounts to hundreds of millions, maybe exceed 1 billion euros. When, let me remind you, the repeal of Christmas and Easter bonuses of pensioners saved approximately 750 million euro per year. Of course, it is the duty of the organization administration not only to eradicate once and for all the phenomenon of dispensing retirement benefits to people who are not entitled to them, but also to claim all the sums that were appropriated by relatives of deceased pensioners. One should wonder about what feeds the vicious cycle of administrative incompetence and social complicity in Greece, allowing such phenomena to thrive depriving of social benefits and resources those who need them and mortgaging the future of social security. I won't go through other examples of and anecdotes regarding the health sector fraud, but we might have time during the questions time to elaborate on this. The third great challenge faced by ICA nowadays, also concerning broader issues of the Greek social security system, is associated with the modernization of the organization management. In other words, how the organization is managed and how it deals with its insured population. This very issue does not trouble the competent ministries alone. The efforts of millions of insured people to obtain their pensions or of business to have their contributions recognized run up against a series of bureaucratic snags on a daily basis. Unfortunately so, social security legislation in Greece is marked by a maze of clauses which often include contradictory regulations, hampering further the system's management. It goes without saying that the handicaps of Greek public administration are also true as far as ICA is concerned. Probably it would be unrealistic to claim that the organizational modernization is possible to be accomplished irrespective of wider intervention regarding the public sector's effectiveness in Greece. In any event, quite a lot of planning has taken place and quite a lot of actions are well underway, aiming at diminishing the people's causes for grievance and at increasing the citizens' confidence in social security. Allow me to cite in brief just a few examples. The big problem of waiting time to collect one's pension, often leading people to despair, as they had to remain without income for months, and in some cases for years, until the amount of their benefits was manually calculated, has been solved by passing the law of a provisional pension, which corresponds to the 80% of the beneficiary's latest income, and it is issued within 45 days after submitting the retirement application. In addition, the insured are able to visit online information tools regarding establishment of retirement benefits rights based on the criteria of age and insurance period. There is also access to a tool allowing insured people to follow up the course of their retirement application. Also, ICA's further online connection with other institutions ensures that beneficiaries do not have to visit ICA's branches in order to have their individual claims confirmed, while businesses can request their insurance clearance automatically. Similar procedures have been introduced in order to simplify the payments of benefits and other transactions, which until lately were the cause of the infamous ICA's queues, rendering the organization a synonym to the citizens' distress. It is undeniably true that measures such as this are expected to improve the insured people's daily life, but it's impossible to claim that normative interventions alone will root out bureaucracy as if by magic. In order to adhere to these interventions, which are to the benefit of those insured, constant effort and inspections are needed. If one only considers the fact that most of ICA's employees, as well as employees of other public organizations, of other public institutions, have this long-standing mentality that even if a law is voted and is typically into force, they can ignore it for as long as they don't receive the infamous enforcement circular, Egiklios, issued by the supervising ministry. Thus, one sees the following paradox. Although these circulars, Egikli, are by no means legally binding, but mere interpretational tools, they become a Bible for civil servants who claim to be unable to apply even a valid legal act under the pretext that the interpretive circular has not been issued yet. It is impossible, however, to discuss about ICA's substantial reformation and modernization without including in this debate its management and governance model. After all, it is obvious that without an organizational upgrading, ICA will be unable to rise to its social role. Such an endeavor has to promote and consolidate the actual enforcement of self-government through the direct participation of the insured and the employers into the administration's appointment procedures and through establishing more substantial accountability procedures of these bodies to the insurance community. Presently, ICA functions on the basis of organizational structures dating back as far as the 50s, which do not fulfill either the transparency and accountability standards required today or the contemporary administrative reality of the country. In this context, discussions are taking place concerning the transition towards a new administration mechanism that would take into account the following: extending ICA's self-government from the level of employees and employers' representation in the board to the level of being able to choose the fund's administration, abolishing the government's privilege to appoint as governors person of its choice. The constitution of 13 peripheral administrations, which will decentralize jurisdiction and responsibilities, and at the same will change radically the organization and its central directorates. Downsizing ICA's branches by eliminating considerably the reasons which oblige the insured people to visit ICA's premises, as well as developing new alternative methods of servicing them. And reinstituting the jurisdiction of ICA budget approval to the board of directors, to ICA's board of directors. Since 2008, this task was allocated to the Ministry of Labor and Social Security, practically negating the administration of ICA, the responsibility and the jurisdiction to determine the retirement benefits and the financial viability of the insurance assets. The last greatest challenge ICA lately is called upon to face is its proactive approach as far as dissipating new risk owing to demographic aging and new social conditions in order to consolidate its social role in the people's conscience. Increasing needs of long-term care for the elderly, professional mobility, and the impetuous change of working terms and social life modify the demands in terms of social security as well as of its futures. In this context, ICA is obliged to put emphasis on the promotion of adequate benefits and coverage for new insurance risks, expanding both the content of its current benefits and the possibilities of developing an insurance system that would cover risks which are expected to increase considerably the organization's indirect obligations, such as the long-term care for the elderly people. Such initiatives, in combination with the eradication of administrative abnormalities, giving citizens a hard time, and with the adherence to regulations that would not stipulate exemptions and unjustified privileges, may give rise to a new relationship of trust between ICA on the one hand and its insured citizens and business on the other. I attempted to provide you with a clear view of ICA's reforms, which are underway, but also of the obstacles of these administrative changes. These obstacles are mostly due to long-standing deficiencies and pathogenesis, which, owing to acute economic crisis, emerged in a dramatic way. However, I do believe that this is an opportunity to make a fresh start and treat precisely these weaknesses as reserve forces, which can improve spectacularly the potentials of ICA as well as those of the Greek social security system in general. If we realize that in essence the issues of contribution evasion, uninsured labor, mismanagement, money squandering, fragmentation, and institutionalization of numerous special regulations and exemptions, of bureaucracy and lack of effective government are the hidden assets of ICA, then I believe that we have reasons to be hopeful about the mid-term financial sustainability of the organization as well as of the social security's credibility. Whether things will eventually develop favorably for ICA and the Greek social security system depends on the goal we choose as far as social security is concerned. In short, it depends on whether we wish to deal with the big issues, not by applying the logic of managing the political cost and the current economic crisis, but rather by gazing at the future and the interest of the new and the coming generation. After all, it was Seneca who wrote, if one doesn't know which port is steering to, no wind would be favorable to him. Thank you very much for your attention.
Very interesting presentation. I'm sure there's quite a few points to follow. Questions? We can take perhaps one or two questions at a time if it's related ones.
The elephant in the room, of course, is the idea of a major default. You alluded to this yourself, that the press is talking about the 60% defaults at the moment. Your conclusion is that this eco-ship could be steered, as it were, if the organization was reformed, made more efficient, a future could be charted. But what are the impacts of the assets of eco of such a major default? It suggests that if you were simply not the masters of your future, it could be surely undermined.
Yes. First of all, we don't know yet what will happen. The information that going around says that pension funds would not be affected by this haircut. In some way, they would find a way to exclude the bonds which are held by pension funds from this haircut. But still, I believe that this is not a major issue. ICA holds something like bonds amount to 2 billion euro. Of course, it's a significant amount, but the major thing is contributions. If we manage to collect effectively the contributions, if we manage, of course, in a within a difficult situation with high unemployment to collect contributions, then I think the effect of the haircut, even if it will apply to the bonds that ICA holds, would not be significant. Because the revenues of the revenues from the exploitation of the removal assets are only 5% of the total revenues of ICA.
What was about compliance? Because this is something which you repeatedly mentioned. On the one hand, you'd say that there are very high contribution levels, and you suggest that the very high contribution levels discourage compliance by of themselves. You also suggested that the pension system and the health insurance system were at one stage bound together in order to encourage compliance, because there was a kind of benefit of contributing to one because you got the other. Now, when you are splitting the two, you are splitting out two separate contributions. There are now going to be contributions, presumably, to health, and there's going to be contributions to pensions. The pensions contributions will be the single contributions will be lower than the total of the two, but will the two contributions still together be high, and are we still in this situation where, in fact, the very high level of contributions, be it to health or to pensions, puts people off from participating?
Yes. The thing is that the separation of the pensions, the health sector from the pension sector, didn't entail the separation of collection mechanisms. Uh-huh. So the contributions would remain under the authority of the collection of contributions would remain under the authority of ICA, who would collect also contributions for AOP, and then we transfer the money to AOP. Of course, there are discussions now because the current model for collecting contributions has proved to be inefficient. Also, the model of collecting taxes proved to be inefficient in Greece. For some new ideas, one of them I mentioned, we have already made discussions with the Ministry of Finance to establish a public revenues authority, like in Sweden or in Italy, where a single authority collects taxes and social security contributions, or having a system similar to the Belgian system, where it is a single organization collecting contributions for all insurance funds. And this is one of the problematic areas of the Greek social security system, because, as you said, it affects directly the financial sustainability of the system and increases the cost of compliance.
But has one considered that trade-off of lower contribution rates generating higher compliance as well?
Yes, it has been considered, but I think the main obstacle for this is the current economic situation, although you might argue the opposite, because having this deficit in the ICA's budget, it might be a high risk to decide now the lowering the level of contributions. Mm-hmm. But certainly it has been discussed, and ICA's governor has said in many occasions that its aim is to reduce the level of contributions, at least for the businesses who pay regularly their obligations.
Mm-hmm. Can I partly go back to the budget question? There's something that I don't seem to understand there, because the pension leg of the Social Security Foundation was cross-subsidizing the health mm-hmm. sector. Now this is being taken off, so 2 billion savings. Then we increase the pensionable, effective pensionable age, we reduce the value of pensions, so some savings should be coming from there. We also effectively abolished a big chunk of the lump sum payment that goes when you retire.
Yeah, it was not with ICA, but yes.
So okay, yes. But some savings should be coming also there. And then, but the main thing, the main emphasis in the you know, the four big measures that had to secure financial sustainability, and what you proposed was actually increasing revenues and dealing with non-compliance, of course. And I take the point that morally this is a good thing to do, but I wonder whether in an economy where businesses may not have the money to, you know, like maybe if they want to comply, maybe the, you know, compliance goes down because of the economic situation, maybe increasing the revenues, given all the savings, is not the first thing to do, and maybe the managerial and cultural changes are more of a priority until 2020 or whenever it is that we get out of the crisis.
I think we don't have the luxury of not pushing everything at the time. If we leave out the collection of debts, which are 6 billion euros at the moment, then we deprive ICA from significant resource, and we make it unfair for businesses who comply, because it's also a matter of competition, and you cannot have businesses that do not pay ever their social security contributions competing in the same market with businesses that are regularly paying them. That's an important thing, and we have as I said, I think one major challenge is that we have to build trust in the social security system. There is a trust deficit now, not only among businesses, but also among insured people. And this is a huge challenge for public policy, for ICA's management and Ministry of Labour and Social Insurance, to rebuild trust in the system.
I don't want to labour the point, but just to go back to that.
Just right. Basic economics, O level and GCSE, yeah? The circular flow of income. You know, one side we've got withdrawals, the other side we've got injections. Over the last 14, 15 years, Greece has, through GDP, been improving and increasing. I don't understand how Greece, at this moment in time, is in this crisis. I just can't, it doesn't compute. There's no, my common sense is saying to me, how is it a country that's been growing through consistency is now facing this dilemma? What brought this about?
We have to look at the causes of this growing. Was this growth because of the productivity rates, or was it growth because of consumption?
I'm not an economist.
I'm neither an economist. but of course, it's something broader than the theme of today's seminar. But I think it's also a consequence of the international crisis and the crisis of 2008, which hit Greece as the weakest part of the Eurozone. So the financials became a debt crisis, and Greece, which had the worst debt problem, was the first to be affected.
Okay.
With the economic situation, high tax evasion, and high unemployment, how exactly will the Department of Health be financing and providing the new healthcare? Will it be publicly provided, or will it be privately provided? Are you going to open up to private insurance? How is it going to be provided and financed?
It will be the new organization for health services will be financed by the contributions, by the social security contributions. Of course, the national health system is funded by the state budget. But what is new is the integration, let's say, of the infrastructure of the this social insurance organization with the infrastructure and the structures of the national healthcare system. Of course, as you may know, in Greece we had a big problem with health expenses. We are among the top, the champions of consumption of drugs in Europe, I think. And as I said, the example of ICA, I mean, within 5 years, we had an increase of 300% in expenses for drugs. So, and of course, the health sector is characterized by a lot of fraud in Greece, and it would be difficult to fund the needs of the healthcare sector. But I think there are also opportunities for savings and cutting expenses without jeopardizing the quality of services. And it is important that within these new organizations are merged all the infrastructures and the resources of four insurance funds. And these combine not only services provided by public health units, like the medical centers operated by ICA before, but also through a network of practitioners, doctors, private doctors.
education and in the broader debate on issues of compliance and enforcement. Would I be right to conclude that the basic economic design of the education system is okay and no further reforms are needed?
No, definitely no, I wouldn't suggest that. I suggested that these are the alternatives for short-term and mid-term perspective, and if we look at the long-term necessary reforms, then we should provide more structural reforms for our system. And this has to do with the retirement age, of course, with the return rate of our contributions. As I said, 70% of the pensions of the current pensioners of ICA receive the minimum pension, the minimum guaranteed pension, which, of course, doesn't correspond to the pensions they would get if they were in a funded system, because they were insured only for 15 years, but they still get a pension of 400, 500 euros that is funded not by the contributions of the people who remained in the social security for longer period, and also by state budget. Normally, this could have been a social welfare benefit, not a social insurance retirement benefit paid through contributions. But the option, historically, the option in the Greek system was to include this group in the social insurance system, and this has caused a big problem now. And I wouldn't suggest that these measures would be enough for the long-term solution, because we have a demographic aging problem in Greece, and the projections are very worrying. As I said, if we won't do anything in 2050, we have to give 23% of our GDP to pensions. This won't be sustainable.
Can I quickly just how much of that 23% do you think is addressed by the enforcement and implementation?
I cannot tell. Surely the latest legislation enacted in 2010 gives a window of opportunity, because it raises retirement age, and it introduced this national pension, which only this part of pension would be guaranteed by the state, and also the proportional pension, which will correspond to the contribution state. But I cannot tell how much of this is covered by the compliance measures.
Do you think that part of the necessary reforms, the structural reforms, is what the World Bank and the EU have been arguing, that we should combine pay-as-you-go systems, self-funded systems, the economic pillar, and especially the one now that you mentioned also that if we had self-funded pensions, this will get a much lower pension. And I wonder if these people have no incentive to actually pay contributions, because they say, whatever happens, I'll get this amount of money, and I don't really have to pay contribution every year, even if I'm working.
You're right, this creates all sorts of problems. For instance, now, because of the urgent measures that the Troika, the Greek government implemented, there was a cut in the pensions above 1,200 euros, which someone can say is not fair, because these people were insured for 30, were in the social security system paying high contributions for many years, for 35 years. Years, these are the only ones who are affected by the cuts. And note that in Greece, often people who were about to retire in five, let's say in five, 6 years, they were asking their employer to arrange to pay, to declare higher salary and pay higher contributions in order to get a higher pension. And this, of course, resulted in higher revenues for ICA. This won't be the case anymore because no one sees the benefit of paying high contributions since the highest pension is getting down. Of course, this could create all sorts of problems. It's also a problem because in Greece the second pillar system has not been developed, although it is enacted since 2003. Practically, there are no occupational pension funds. I mean, there are five or six, but not genuine occupational funds as we know them here in the UK or in other EU countries.
Management issue, more mundane issues perhaps, but as you highlighted, important. I'm wondering whether the integration of the various insurance funds somehow leads to some kind of unification of organizational structures and processes. In particular, I have in mind the information systems, which is something that I studied ages ago. And I know that there are lots of them, different in different insurance organizations, almost none of them effective and adequate. And it makes me despair on one hand how one goes, for example, in the, we understand that different information systems make mergers of companies impossible very often. In this case, I wonder what is happening. On the other hand, I guess basically because we all need ground for hope, one might take it as a case where probably some kind of organizational reform is going to be worked out. Do you know, should I be optimistic, or is this something that there is no ground for optimism at all?
difficult to say, but I think we should be optimistic basically because the ICA had the most developed information system, and many of the insurance funds which were consolidated either had a very primitive information.
OGA had a better one at some point.
Yeah, but OGA is still separate. It's still separate. I'm talking about the employees' insurance funds, that's the banks' insurance funds, the DEI, public electricity company, OTE, the telecommunications company, which funds were merged in ICA. So ICA had the most advanced information system and somehow dominated the management of the others. I think this is always a problem, and especially in Greece, where there is a lack of resources on this system. But basically, the move that now we have a single and integrated pension organizations, it means that we can save resources by implementing something that will be adopted by all interested, all stakeholders. For instance, now all civil servants, new civil servants, the ones employed after 1st of January 2011, are insured in ICA, which means their data, their information will go to the ICA system. But of course, there are many problems with the merge of insurance funds. I'll tell you an example. National Bank of Greece, Ethniki, was merged in ICA in 2007. And until very recently, although every month National Bank paid the contribution of its employees, we didn't manage in ICA to have the registry of the employees of the National Bank, which meant that we got the money, but we didn't know which contributions correspond to which employee. And this was a failure, also not only a technical failure, but a failure of administration to understand and act effectively.
What is your sense about generally about implementation? Because it's one thing to legislate and it's another to implement. How do you feel about the rate of implementation? Are we keeping up reasonably so far?
Not really. I think as I presented some examples, for instance, we legislated the provisional pension, and people came to ICAS branches and asked for the provisional pension, and the employees of ICAS said, I don't have the GPOs, I don't have the CIRCA, so I cannot give. But said, that's the law in the official gazette of the government. So yes, we're lagging behind the implementation, but of course many measures are underway now to speed up all these processes and use a lot online systems and online services in order to make things easier in the implementation front.
Just to follow up on the information systems issues. Since 2006, we spent over 40 million euros on information systems for ICA. And so there has been money spent on this issue. And I was wondering, while we talk a lot about contributions evasion as a main cause for some of the problems, a lot of the problems that ICA faces now, how much some of these problems also relate to the way the funds have been managed themselves, and how much you talk about transparency and how ICA publishes a lot of this information. How much of this information is electronically available? I made a very brief search on your site, but I couldn't find much.
You can find information, you can find an annual report, a statistical report about contributions and about the let's say the projections, but you refer to how we use the the money from invested in IT systems. I think ICA now has the most advanced system. All periodical statements of businesses are now submitted electronically, only electronically. Businesses can get their records, their insurance records through internet, and a lot of people are using the online tools that have been introduced. Also, since last year, all contributions are paid only through through banks. So a lot of things have been promoted. Of course, there are many left to be done. But knowing the situation in other public organizations and insurance funds, I'm not saying that in ICA the situation is ideal regarding IT, but it's one of the most advanced systems. When we were discussing now with the Ministry of Finance on trying to merge the process of the statement for the statement that companies make for the salaries to the tax authorities with the statement they make to ICA for the social contributions, we found out that the system of ICA is far more advanced than the system of the Ministry of Finance, which doesn't have an electronic only recently.
My question also related to the degree to which economic data with regards to ICA itself and its operation
are public. The accountability.
Yes, the accountability. And whether there is any thinking of making this openly available in the framework of open government initiatives that this administration was very keen to follow.
That's the promise of the new administration of ICA, that all this would be made publicly available. Of course, there is a, let's say, a delay in the recent and ongoing accountability process. The data needs to be processed, and we need to draft a report and then make it available. So this creates a gap, a time gap in revealing all this information. From what I can say, I think these annual reports of FICA would be publicly available, if not for 2010, the previous year, surely for 2011, the year that is going to end in a couple of months.
Not just the raw data as well.
Sorry?
What the open data community actually wants is open data, not just the report.
You mean the data of the...
Not the primary data, statistical data in a machine processing form. Because that's the way you can actually really check...
For research purposes, you mean?
Yes.
Yes, I think that the main bulk of social insurance data that are available comes from ICA. When the ILO people came to make their actuarian study, and previously when the... in 2002, when the UK organization came to make the actuary report, mainly made use of the data came from ICA, because there is a good statistical infrastructure in ICA. I agree with you that maybe there is a lack of transparency in publicizing regularly this data, but I think it's something that will be addressed soon.
I wonder, because we talked a lot about information technology. We talked about implementation. What we have not talked about is the human resource dimension of this. We talked about improving management culture. We talked about bureaucratic impediments and the way in which staff tend to behave and tended to behave. You have a good technology, sorry, but you've not convinced me necessarily that you have a human resource base that will actually use this and will actually put through the kind of changes which you've been talking about. And that seems to me to be as much of a problem as anything else. Now, we're talking about, I don't know, 100,000 civil servants. Now, I presume that ICA counts amongst those who are supposed to be being laid off at the moment. There might be 100,000 deadweight civil servants. There might be an awful lot of deadweight civil servants in ICA itself. What is actually being done about replenishing the personnel resource which ICA has got to actually meet the targets which and the ambitions which you are setting and which you have laid out? The ambitions are fine, but it is the implementation which is still the problem, and I'm still not convinced yet about that.
Can I ask a related question to that? I think from your presentation, what impressed me as most radical probably position or hope is that the governor of ITA will not be a political appointee.
Yeah.
Now, how much hope you have that this is actually something that it will be done? And how will it be achieved?
I can tell you that this is the suggestion of the committee in which I'm participating, and it will be the suggestion in the form of a new law that will go to the Ministry of Labour. It has been decided by the current governor of ICA to propose a new model that the social partners would nominate 3 or 5 persons from which the minister or the parliament...
That's not quite so optimistic, is it?
No.
The ultimate decision still stays with the minister, but we offer you 3 options.
No, but I mean, in the conclusions of the committee, of the Committee for Real Strategic Reorganization of ICA, one of the main proposals referring to the governance model is this. And hopefully, I mean, cannot tell you about the what are the chances, but it has been discussed with the ministry. Of course, the argument is that in the past, as you may know, the auxiliary funds in Greece were governed solely by representatives of social partners. And many of these auxiliary funds created huge deficits mm-hmm. because of irresponsible management, that there was no state intervention in this management, and the representatives, the managers who came from, were appointed by the social partners themselves, took irresponsible decisions. They were raising the benefits, and after a few years,
yes, I mean, all of that is true. It still doesn't mean that we should necessarily be optimistic. That the proposal is that
we will know soon, because in December, I don't know what in December, but normally by December, the ministry should submit the new law for the reorganization of ICA.
But what about the STAR? Because it's all very well. I mean, we have an external head of the statistical agency who was moved in to run the statistical agency. But there was still the staff of the National Statistical Agency. And they're as much of an impediment as, let's say, irresponsible governors of the system. And what you were describing to me was not only a question of, let's say, irresponsible policy decisions being made, but actually an inability to process and work through and do the kind of jobs which you would assume that an effective social security organisation ought to be able to do, which was at the level of people saying, I can't do this because I haven't seen the circular. It was a mentality which is a fundamental problem. And that's why I talked about 10,000 or 100,000 civil servants, and I talked about dead wood. It's not just at the top, it's all the way through the system.
True. That was,
if I may, sorry, just to reinforce that, I noticed that the comments ago, you were talking positively about the technology of ECA, but if we put two answers together,
exactly, yeah.
If we put two answers together, we've heard that since 2006, ECA has had 40 million euros to improve its technology, and since 2007, they weren't able to track the contributions from those employed in ethnic e-counseling. This is an interesting.
But please answer the personnel question. The person has been asking
this. I tell you that it was not only the fault of ICA's people, it was also the fault of National Bank's IT, because the other banks, for instance, Boriki Bank, was fine within a couple of months with the ICA system. Anyway, but one. You are correct, Bernard. It's a huge challenge for ICA. And of course, the recent measure of making redundant 30,000 people affects also ICA. And the unfortunate thing is that it affects people in higher in the hierarchy, because our directors or general directors are above 60, and these are the most experienced people in ICA. And this would be affected primarily by this measure. But then again, we cannot do much, because there is a clause that ICA, all public organizations, cannot hire people, of course. And it has been discussed within the committee, the Strategic Reorganization Committee. And the effort now is to reorganize the units of ICA and put more people in the two fields that we need resources, in pensions and in calculating pension benefits, and in inspections. Mm-hmm. So the reorganization, which will decrease the workload of other departments, which can now work through e-governance tools, etc., will assist, will go to the units that we have the most acute needs. It's a huge challenge because ICAS personnel will be cut, of course, but I think there are margins to restructure our units and our branches in order to have a more efficient way of work. And of course, it's also a matter of posing the right incentives to people. As you know, with the law passed last week, all extra bonuses were cut, apart from the productivity bonus, which they said will be calculated according to some objective indicators, and this can work. I don't know how it will be translated in ICA or in other public organizations, but I agree with you, it's a huge challenge that needs to be addressed now, but the only way to do it is through restructuring our operations and saving resources from
the governor question, of course, a huge one, and that's why I didn't raise it earlier. Now it has been raised, I throw in my bit. I'm very doubtful about it. Even the central banks that are independent have their governors appointed by the government. The question is really how we ensure a meritocratic appointments. That is the question. I don't know the answer to that. But the matter of who appoints is important from the point of view of accountability and responsibility. The government is responsible for delivering the system. Therefore, it has to be associated in some way with the top layer of the institution itself. I'm very skeptical, but if I may make a suggestion in that direction, perhaps you could think along the lines of the way the Archbishops of Canterbury and York are appointed.
it's the same system. We propose three, the Prime Minister chooses
one.
Yeah.
It's very similar.
Yeah. No, I thought so you said you have to appoint a committee. You appoint a committee of three.
No, the social partners would nominate a list of three or five people,
yes.
And then the minister should pick.
Oh yes,
pick
well, that's the archbishop system. Yes.
Whereas in Germany, for instance, the Rentenversicherung, the social insurance fund governor is appointed solely by social partners, a term, two-year term. The governor comes from the employer's side, and the next 2 years term comes from the employee side. I think, in my view, it's a question of how mature is our democracy and our institutions. If we aim to have mature institutions, including trade unions, I think we can look at this at models like that that of course can ensure that the people who are the actual stakeholders of the of ICA and of any social security organization have a say in the decision making process. Now, we in the board of ICA, we have representatives of employers, of employees, and of pensioners. But the real decisions are not taken by the board, are taken by the governor appointed by the government.
What are the real decisions that are taken independently of the government? So what is the discretion that the government has
you know, on things that are not decided by the central government.
For instance, one basic thing that also is now the question is the budget. Since 2008, and because of health expenses, the government took this responsibility from ICA. So the Minister of Labour and Social Insurance approves the budget of ICA, not ICA itself. Mm-hmm. And this, of course, has to change now, because since the health sector is now independent, and we won't have the problem of black hole of the expenses of the health sector. I think it's realistic to ask again for this competence, for this responsibility.
What are the Germans saying about all these changes? Germans, I'm sure Greece and Germany are very close.
I'm not sure. I cannot tell what the Germans are saying. I think Troika is visiting ICA regularly, and I recall that the reason that the negotiations were cut last month and Troika left for 3 weeks, endangering the continuation of the program, was because they found out that 2 months after the midterm program agreed in July, the finance minister asked for another 1.6 billion for the social insurance funds, additional funding, which was not estimated in July. And within 2 months, he asked of 1.6 billion. So Troika has a direct interest on reforming ICA and enhancing its administrative capacity, not only in terms of collecting contributions, but in every respect.
Mm-hmm. In relation to this extra budget, there is a rush at the moment in the Greek employees, particularly in the public sector, to get retired, because they have a feeling that if they delay it, somehow new legislation will be implemented with they will lose their kind of accrued benefits. But isn't that a crazy way that we ended up where the expenses of the state increase and obviously they need more money to pay for it? Is that something that I have a mental block about, or is it a real anomaly that has been developed by the very measures of austerity that are implemented? On one hand, we try to cut down the how much the state spends. On the other hand, we somehow created incentives to put more people into the expenses, the pension expenses of the state.
Yeah, but that's not a peculiarity of what is going on in Greece. I mean, I have seen exactly the same thing going on in the UK government, partly as a result of the responses to cuts and the fact that people are leaving. And it's precisely the same kind of people that you are describing who are quitting, including the sort of middle and senior ranks of the civil service, for precisely that reason. But the question is, who are you, and it comes back to this personnel question, who are you actually losing under these circumstances, and who are you retaining, and what is your ability to recruit new people? You say if there is a complete blockage of recruitment, if you have systems and structures which sometimes take out some of the best, it might take out people who have merely got old there and have done nothing, but you are putting new demands upon people. You are actually putting demands upon people to interface with customers in an effective way and not to take the attitude that they have taken before. To actually use this technology and to teach people how to use this technology as well. So teach customers how to use this technology, to encourage employers to use this technology. You're talking about very, very different people possibly than you need at the sort of middle and lower levels, which you possibly have not got, and that's what I'm concerned about.
Yeah,
Then I have to stop here. Please don't answer the question, partly because we've exceeded our time, but also because there was this jumped into another question which was different. So if you can give a quick answer to the question about the people who get into retirement now and whether they are a big burden to the system.
I think this contradiction is apparent, but it's a contradiction because Greece, as all European member states of the European Union, has committed to prolonging working life. There is a European Year of Active Aging next year, and it's the Troika in which European Commission is participating that is asking of cutting down the number of employees. Of course, it's not asking of making redundant the oldest of the employees, but it's the European Commission part of this decision, and at the same time they say you have to prolong working life. Definitely there is a contradiction, and I think, I mean, my view is that it's totally wrong to take these measures, I mean, to encourage people to leave earlier from work, but at the same time it's a personal decision. I mean, the legislation provides now for less privileges for people that are leaving work before 60 or 65. Even the recent cuts in pension affect more the younger pensioners, the pensioners who are below the age of 60.
Okay, I think we have to stop here. Thank you very much for this very interesting presentation and the extensive answers to all these questions, very informative indeed. I hope we have more information also about the general judgment of whether to be optimistic or pessimistic about the situation in Greece, and we'll find out more as the days go. A big thank you for the presentation. Thank you.